Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight was adopted when he was 6 weeks old, became a world-class chef, and has authored 2 cookbooks. He was a finalist on the series Survivor 2 and competed in the Ironman Triathlon in Hawaii. He's produced numerous TV documentaries, including Ice Warriors and Our Story Of. He's the former president of Rainbow Connection, which grants wishes to children with life-threatening illnesses. His name, the Adventure Chef, Keith Famey. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're talking to the adventure chef, Keith Famey. Keith, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Oh, thank you. It's great to be here.
Can we start by you talking about your childhood and your parents?
Sure. I grew up in Farmington Hills. I was great family. I was adopted, but I grew up in Farmington Hills, went to Farmington High School, and, regular kid, ran around the neighborhood, did stuff that, kids shouldn't do. I'm a great dad because of it. My son can get away with nothing. So.
Your dad and your mom, what did they do?
My mom was a medical library technician at Botzer Hospital. My father was an engineer, automotive engineer. And regular stuff. My sister, I have a sister and a brother. All three of us were actually adopted, all different families.
You were adopted at 6 weeks old.
I was adopted. Yeah, I was adopted at 6 weeks old. And ironically enough, when I was 35, I met my biological parents and 13 brothers and sisters. Actually, 15 brothers and sisters between the two of them. And that was was an interesting time in my life. Hey, it's interesting about adoption. There's pros and cons. People say you shouldn't look for your parents, or you should, or this and that. I think that adopted children, I think until you really looked into the eyes of your parents, your biological parents, do you really know who you are? I mean, there's a lot of, nurture or hereditary, there's that whole issue. There's a lot of hereditary stuff that's there. In thinking patterns, psychological patterns, and it was good. It was a very healthy thing for me. It was a difficult stage in my life when I was 35, and it was healthful. It was good for me. But at the same time, I did it very carefully. I made sure my parents that raised me were really part of the process and didn't leave them out of it. So we kind of went on the adventure together in a way.
What was your first jobs that you had?
Nothing exciting. Washed dishes in a Chinese restaurant. That was it. Washed dishes in a Chinese restaurant. The Great Wall in Farmington Hills. And that was my first job.
How did you ever become a chef?
Well, I wasn't the best student in school. So I just gravitated to cooking. And I happened to land a job when I was young. I was 16 or 17 years old, with a guy by the name of Douglas Grech, who at the time, and still does, go by the name Douglas. And he was at the Great Dane. And I was fascinated by this whole chef thing and the fact that you could be creative and you could still be a leader, and it was interesting, and something I just happened to, gravitate to. And I worked in several restaurants around town, went to Europe, worked in New York, and all that good stuff.
The restaurant business arguably is one of the toughest businesses out there. You've started and successfully run many of them. What's been the key?
Well, Jack, who told you it's the most difficult?
Well, a lot of them don't make it, in that sense, difficult.
Oh, it's not difficult, Jack. It's, brain surgery is difficult. No, the restaurant business is tough. It's, it's really, it's a simple way to look at it. When everyone else is playing, you're working. It's just that simple. And you have to really, it's something you either love, it's a passion, you do it because you love to do it. You're not there because you're going to make $1 million at it unless you've got multiple units. You just have to really be into it, and you have to do it for me, in my case, the reason I was successful when I was in that realm of my life was probably because I enjoyed seeing people smile. I was very gratifying for me to create a dish and have somebody really like it, and at the same time see them enjoy their dining experience, the whole environment. So I enjoyed it. I made a lot of friends.
Let's talk about the Survivor series. Survivor 2, you become a contestant. How did that ever happen?
You know, when Survivor 1 and Survivor 2 was around, it was very new. So I just applied. I sent an application in and a videotape in. They had 48,000 applicants for Survivor 2. They honed them down to 800, and they go through those, and you interview, and then they pick 48, and those 48 go to L.A., and you spend 10 days sequestered to a hotel room, and they psychological tests and all this other stuff. And before you know it, you're on a plane flying to Australia to go on a walkabout that's going to last, you know, 41 days. I just strictly did it because I just felt there was, you know, I was a single dad, and I had 1 in 16 chance of winning $1 million. What kind of, those odds are incredible.
You lasted 41 days. You placed third toward that $1 million. People were mad at you because of your cooking ability on the show.
People in the audience watching or people on the show?
People on
the show had no reason to complain. None at all. I was feeding them. The rice wasn't perfect. Didn't have a lid on the pan. That was a great scenario to see something unravel in a power play that took place on the show. But you know what? The environment is that way. That's why the show is so successful. You know, such a heated issue over a spoon of rice.
What did the experience teach you?
Well, it taught me that at 41 days, you can go from 170 to 137 pounds pretty quickly with just eating rice. But it taught me a lot about myself. It taught me a lot about... I spent a lot of alone time together. You know, the last week or so there on the show, I really did a lot of time where I spent walking off in the distance just hanging by myself. And it was unusual to be in an environment where you hear nothing at all. A lot of soul searching. It was good. I walked away, felt like I won anyways.
You've said that you go in as a person and you come out as a cast member.
Yeah, you do. You have no concept in when you walk onto a show like that you really do it. You walk in as a person, you walk out as a cast member. You really have to understand what those shows are all about, and the fact that they really take and they're creating a television show. You don't realize that when you're there, but the fact is that's what they're doing. They're creating a television show, and your sound bites, your image, things that you do are going to be part of a piece of work that's going to be edited into a form of entertainment. And you have to realize that, and you do realize it afterwards.
We're talking to Keith Famey. And I'm Jack Crystal, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
This is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR with Jack Crystal.
We're with Keith Famey. Keith, why are these reality shows, Survivor, The Amazing Race, American Idol, Dancing with the Stars, why are they so unbelievably popular?
Well, I think it's pretty simple. It's the closest way for people, the viewership, to be able to identify with the person on TV. They can live vicariously through that person, whether it's adventure, whether it's the arts, whether it's striving to become a national new singer. Everybody gravitates to the shows differently for different reasons. Fear Factor, you know, how would I do that? Could I do that? Survivor, how could I last? Dancing with the Stars, I can dance. I wonder if I... So it's just a natural way of living vicariously through somebody that you can closely identify with possibly because they're an everyday Joe.
First hour-long documentary you did was From Hanoi to China Beach. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I had an opportunity to go on a bicycle ride. We shot this in 97, just myself and Kevin Hewitt, my cameraman, went. It was no big crew, just two of us. And I did a bicycle ride from Hanoi to China Beach. It was 450 miles with three Vietnam veterans. And it was just to experience the countryside. They were going back for the first time. It was really an amazing trip. I mean, as much as it was about food, because I was a chef, it was about life. It was about adventure. It was about forgiveness. it was interesting to see, for me, young, you know, I was at the time, I was, you know, 30-some years old, to, I was just excited about being there. For them, it was walking on soil that they lost comrades in. They were shot at. In this one person's case, he was shot twice and badly wounded, and he'd gone back to see what it was like. And one experience was it was amazing. We sat in a Viet Cong's home, and the Viet Cong was still a soldier now, and they were sat and they reminisced about what it was like during the war, and they drank sake, and when we were done and we getting ready to get on our bicycles and leave, he hugged this guy and he says, "This is my friend." It was the most touching moment for me. And for everybody, but, you know, of course, more importantly for him. It was interesting to see. So Vietnam was a good lesson. It was beautiful countryside, by the way. The way to see Vietnam is to do it on a bicycle, close to the soil.
What were the people like?
You know, I've traveled all over the world. I would say the Vietnamese are some of the friendliest people in the world, beyond any. It's just, they're really amazingly humble. Take you in their home. They're just very, very wonderful people.
You also did a documentary entitled Ice Warriors. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, we shot, my partner and I, Bill Evo, we created this idea to do a show called Ice Warriors. The Detroit Red Wing alumni, a special group, a team was put together by Igor Larionov, and he put all the big guns together, and this was a couple years ago, about a year and a half ago, and they went to Russia and played a six-game series. Now, these are retired guys who still have game, and I came up with the idea of calling it this show Ice Warriors, It Ain't Over Till It's Over, meaning these guys still have got game, and that they're going to go out and play for not money. They're playing for simply the brotherhood of being together. And that's what the Detroit Red Wing alumni is all about, which is really a fascinating organization. I didn't realize until I really got into it. They practice weekly. They play on the weekends. They play for no money. They play for the just strictly the local community. It's really an amazing organization. Well, they went to Russia, and they traveled. We traveled from Moscow to Siberia. We were thousands of miles all over the continent of Russia. And the show Ice Warriors, and you can go to the, you can get it on the website, icewarriors.com. We are nominated for 2 Emmys with it, by the way. But it's all about brotherhood. It's about what happens on the road. Some of these guys never played together. Some of them played together 30 years ago. What would it be like on the road? It's rather kind of emotional at the end. They all come together as a team. There's stressful moments. They're arguing. There's fighting. There's pranks. They win some games. They lose some games. Do they win the series? You got to get the DVD. It's pretty amazing stuff. It was really a good lesson. I had this vision for this, what I hoped it would be, and when I wanted to produce and direct this, and it was more than that. It was truly a road trip of brotherhood, of guys that turned the clock back 30 years to go on the ice and competitively skate and compete, all in the spirit of the USA pride.
1972, they had the famous Russian against...
Yeah.
Were any of those players from either team?
Yes, you'll see them in the DVD. Absolutely. Absolutely. Some of those big guns were playing. You know, to see someone like Joey Koser with some of them, or Dave Lewis and Igor, and it was, yes, you'll see that. It's good stuff. It's very entertaining. The DVD is actually 3 hours long, and proceeds of it go to the Detroit Red Wing alumni.
What were the Russian people like?
The Russian people are friendly, extremely friendly, very hospitable, you know, and different because, you know, in Siberia, it's different than being in Moscow, and it was great. And we were in the town of, I just left my memory for a second here, Lukashenko, who's the president, in Belarus. We went to Belarus. The president of Belarus played. Not only did he host the team and host the games, he played. And that was an amazing game. And to hear the crowd screaming, Belarus, Belarus. It's very interesting. And there was stuff, too, that we went to a war memorial that was extremely touching to all the guys. And it's kind of a sad moment in the show to see what the, you know, the country of Belarus went through during the war times. So it's good. It's rich.
Your latest venture is going to be a series of...
Yeah, yes. Our latest one is what I'm real excited about. We just... our show just aired on Saturday night, the first one. It's going to air again on December 16th and again on Christmas Day. The first of the series is called Our Italian Story. It's part of a new series. It's called Our Story Of, and we're going to be doing all the ethnic communities, the Polish, the German, the Greek, the Chaldean, the Jewish, I mean, et cetera, over the course of a couple years. They're lengthy shows to do. They're complicated shows to do. We shot 70 hours for the Italian story, multiple interviews. And what ends up happening is, you know, I'll interview and spend time with families. We went to Italy twice to film in Italy with individuals. And through many, many voices comes one voice of that community and that culture that helps tell the story of the immigrants and the elders. And the elders have amazing, they have amazing levels of wisdom, and no one really listens to them. And our goal was, and my intention is to bring that message out through all the cultures, all the different ethnic communities. Let that message come out in some way or form. What did they go through? They went through things we'll never experience, you know, through the difficult times. Coming here as an immigrant, no money, no language, no family. Just start with that, and here you go. Go start a life. I mean, that's amazing stuff, and it's exciting to really learn how Michigan, how Detroit, and how America was built through these individuals' lives. And you go to ourstoryof.com, and you can look it through all the different cultures we're working on and click on them and watch and look at things there.
We're talking to Keith Famey, and I'm Jack Crystal, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything is Possible with Jack Crasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Keith Famey, the creator of a groundbreaking series entitled Our Story Of. Keith, you've started with the Italian story. Can you tell us again, when's it playing and where's it
our
playing?
Italian story is airing on WXYZ Channel 7. The next showing is December 16th from 1 to 2, and then on Christmas morning. Which is very fitting for the Italian community. And you can always go to ourstoryof.com and click on our Italian story and see all kinds of pictures and stories and things of that nature.
What if we listen to a couple clips?
Yeah, that'd be wonderful.
The first hardest part, the emigrant, leave my mom and dad and my sister in Italy.
The hardest part, it was to leave my mother in Italy behind. And I remember this, he says, hopes to say I'm going to see you again, with tears on her eyes.
The only way I can describe it, that I felt like being in a jungle. You hear sound, people talk, and you don't know what they're saying.
To grow old is enough suffering. If you don't have money, baby, you're in trouble. Think about it.
Keith, how many people did you talk to, and what were the biggest things you learned from these elderly people?
You know, in the show, there's probably solid 20, 25 people, but, I probably interviewed 40, 50 people. And I think that, you know, everyone will walk away with a pretty solid message, but personally, because I do all the interviews and I spend a great deal of time with these people, I just really realized how difficult it was. I mean, I don't think anyone really comprehends the difficulty of getting off a boat with no language, no money, no family, and trying to build a life. It's pretty amazing stuff. There's a lot to be said for those people, and even more so the kind of people that they are today, and what they are and what they mean to society. And unfortunately, sometimes they're just people forget about them.
When we come back, we'll ask Keith Famey about some of the actual stories. I'm Jack Crasula. This is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Crasula.
We're talking to Keith Famey, who was a 2001 Michiganian of the Year. Keith, you use certain adjectives to describe these people. One, courage. Can you give us a couple stories of courage?
Oh, there's so many. Yeah, you know, there's a gentleman by the name of John Basso that he actually came to Pennsylvania when he got off the boat to work in the coal mines. He arrived when he was 14 or 15 years old. And they wouldn't let him start working until he was 18 years old. He lived with a distant relative in just back then it was very common for them to for many people to sleep in one room. It was very common for people to have, you know, the men sleeping all together and women all sleeping together. It was just a common thing. You wouldn't think anything of it. And he came here with one pair of shoes, and he wore those shoes until he got a job in the coal mines and he could afford money to buy a pair of shoes and underwear. And same shoes. Now your feet grow. You gotta stop and think about it. Your feet grow. And how painful that must have been to have one pair of shoes for 4 years during those growth stages. But you know, the courage to get on a boat and say, I'm gonna go to America and I'm gonna do this because I have something inside me that says I need to, I want to, I have this desire to go and start a life. It's you know, I think the word courage fits every one of them. I wouldn't say you attach it to any one of them. I'd say every one of them has a certain depth of courage that back then is different than our level of courage today. I mean, I have teenage kids. They're great kids. I love them. Could I see my son, he's 14 years old, get on a boat, travel to the new world and start a life? You know, it'd be tough. It'd be tough. There was something about our ancestors. There was something about those early pioneers. There was something about America then, that it was a place that this is where our new life was going to be formed and started. Not just with the Italians, with all the cultures. This one just happens to be the Italian.
Another trait that you talk about is fortitude.
Well, I guess what comes to mind, I think of Anthony Filippis. 12-year-old kid, Italian family. He's 91, 92 now. Stealing coal off the train tracks in Ferndale, actually, to keep their house warm. He slips and he falls, and he grabs onto the couplink and he struggles to get back up, and he slips and falls again. The train jerks and he's with his friends, and his friends try to pull him up, and he falls and he slips. And the train cuts both of his legs below his knees off. Done. And he doesn't even know they're gone. And his friends have to yell at him and say, Tony, your feet are gone. Your feet are gone. It was horrendous. You have to imagine how horrendous it must have been for that moment for that 12-year-old boy. And his two friends, they took their belts off, and they're young kids, to know to take the belts off and put them around his legs to stop the bleeding. And they flagged down a car that eventually got a police car to come pick them up. And they got to the police station, and he refused to tell them his name. And his friends sweared not to tell him who he was because he was afraid to get in trouble from his parents, because he was told not to go to the train tracks. And, you know, to make a long story short, and it should always stay as a long story because there's a lesson there, but for the sake of radio, that young boy, Tony Filippis, ended up founding the company Wright & Filippis, which champions, I say champions with a big C, disabled individuals. And of course they make prosthetics and all that. He formed a prosthetic company, and it was from that amazing, magical, horrific experience he created something that was so touching. And in the documentary you see him roll his pant legs up proudly. He says, I built these legs in 1957. They're not pretty. It doesn't matter. They're going to go with me in my grave. They've served me well. And I asked him one of the questions in the interview. In my interview, I said to him, it'll be on the DVD, I said, if you could turn the clock back and change it all. He said, don't finish the question. I can tell you I would take nothing back. I would not change a thing in my life.
Trait number three, perseverance.
I think of a love story. I think of John and Lena Del Signore. John and Lena Del Signore. John's 26 years old. Lena's 16. He meets her in the little town of Fonte de More. He's 16. He's 26. He's just back from Venezuela. He convinces her to marry him. They know each other 30 days. They get married. He comes to America. They don't see each other for 4 years. She's married. He's married. and she's not allowed to come here, and they didn't know that because he assumed that once he became married and he became an American citizen, or that he would be allowed to bring her. For 4 years, he fought that bureaucracy of the government, of everything that went on and that happened there. When President John F. Kennedy became elected president, the first thing that he did, and he did it within 30 days, that anybody that was married and their spouse was in another country, he immediately allowed that they could come to America and move here. And what a great story. I mean, that's a very touching story. Of course, they own Laurel Manor in Livonia. And they had Fonte de More for years. They named the restaurant Fonte de More after the restaurant, or after the little town that they came of, Fonte de More.
Trait number four, survival.
That word is all these words can be attached to so many individuals. I find this one so fascinating. It never ceases to amaze me, even when I talk about Jim LaPerry. Okay, LaPerry Foods, big company now. He was a butcher, had a little grocery store. He grew up with his father, little Italian grocery stores on the neighborhood. Every 6-7 blocks, there'd be a little grocery store, and he ended up having his own little store and butcher place, and he went bankrupt in 1963. But he had this one product that he was making and selling called Basil's Barbecue Sauce. He went home to his wife and said, we're out of business. I'm in trouble. Either I go find a butcher's job, or I'm going to try to sell the sauce. So he started selling Basil's Barbecue Sauce out of the trunk of his car. Company does $250 million now a year. He was selling barbecue sauce out of the trunk of his car. I just find that so amazing, that how hard did you really have to work? And selling barbecue sauce in the wintertime in those days is unheard of. Let's just think about that. Because who barbecued in the winter back then? Nobody. So, great stories.
One final trait, faith.
Well, you say the word faith and you say the Italian community, I say it's hard to pick one individual. I'll just say them all. I'll just sum them up and just say that between faith and family is probably one of the best ways to relate to the Italian culture, from what I learned from, family and faith and faith and family, and they go hand in hand. We filmed a funeral. I spent the whole day filming a funeral. And it's a very touching moment in the show. And for the premiere of the documentary, I sat with Maria Giambanco and her mom, when it was her father that died. He was an immigrant. I sat with them. I sat with them during that moment, because it was the first time they were going to see this on the screen. And I still thank them to this day that they let me film that. But I wanted that experience to be seen. Amazing, to see faith and family like that come together. And respect. Respect is another very important word. I think it doesn't matter what culture is. I think that to pay and have respect for the elders is imperative. Imperative. If we teach our kids nothing else, teach them respect for the elders.
How has this experience changed Keith Famey?
Well, I think it reinforced a lot of things. I think that I didn't stumble upon this experience by accident. When my father died of Alzheimer's and I sat and held his hand and he took his last breath, I was so overwhelmed with the fact of this is it, this is what happens, this is all there is, and I was grappling with what is life really all about, kind of thing. So I think this just helped reinforce, and every time I spend time with an elder and I listen to them talk and I gravitate to their stories, and I feel like it's my job to ambassadorship their lives, little bits of it is my dad there too. So,
we're talking to Keith Famey, and I'm Jack Grasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything is Possible with Jack Grasula, sponsored by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with Keith Famey, the former president of the Rainbow Connection. Keith, a few months ago, we had Mitch Albom on the show.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you do all these things. How do you do so much? And he said, Jack, basically, I do one thing. I tell stories. You've had a phenomenal world-class life. Is there a common thing to all of the experiences you've done?
Well, maybe a couple. I think that, you know, adventure, you know, I'm kind of an adventure junkie, and the word adventure means a lot of things to me. It could have a lot of meanings. It doesn't always have to be climbing a mountain or racing a dirt bike across a desert. I think that, you know, in where I'm at in life right now, I guess when, you know, people have sometimes have a little bit of difficulty understanding or, you know, putting it together. Wait, you're a chef. What are you doing producing and directing? And I approach it the same way. These documentaries that I'm working on, or any time produced documentary, but the documentaries that I'm working on, you know, I have my own company, Visualist Entertainment Productions, are based around preparation. I have to choose ingredients. I have to select them carefully. They have to be really great quality. They have to balance with other ingredients. I have to mix them thoroughly, properly, and I have to present them well. I do it the same way when I'm creating a recipe. The process, the way in my mind, is no different. It's the same process for me. I could not go and design a car or something like that. I'd be totally lost. But the creative process in producing and directing is the same. It's just now, I guess, as I've gotten older in life, I've become more enriched by the human being, and in a lot of ways, the elders. In this case, the Our Stories of series is that I really enjoy doing interviews. I really enjoy listening. I really enjoy learning. And of course, I've traveled so much around the world in so many countries, I'm naturally drawn to the food and how the food speaks of the language and how a smell and a taste and a seasoning and somehow has some meaning to it far more than just a restaurant on the corner. There's some story behind a pierogi, or there's a story behind a meatball. I mean, there's all those things. There's reasons for those things. And so naturally I'm drawn to that as well. But if it's cooking. I'm cooking.
Can you talk about our kids today and what they eat?
Yeah, I just had a lecture, just lectured my daughter the other day. And I do this continuously. I'm not a health fanatic, but I somewhat am. I'm very conscious of what I eat. The first thing I say to you, all you kids out there, look at the labels. If it says corn syrup on it, don't eat it. Look at your syrup when you go to use syrup in the morning. If it says corn syrup and it's maple flavoring, don't use it. Pure maple syrup. Let's just start with that. Yeah, here's a really simple thing for parents and kids, and parents too. Parents, by the way, it's important. Parents learn to eat properly and better because your kids will follow. Eat your colors every day. It's really simple. I mean, this is just a simple philosophy. Eat your colors. Try to eat every color in the rainbow, whether it's fruits, vegetables, and so on, and eat them in fresh, the freshest form, or not cooked to death form throughout the day, and you'll be healthier, number one. Number two, never eat a bagel in the morning. It spikes your insulin. Never, just to say that again, never eat a bagel in the morning. It spikes your insulin. Eat things always in the morning. You should always have a bowl of oatmeal. Simple. It stays with you. It's a carbohydrate your body needs. It's good for your system. It has all kinds of wonderful attributes to it. And I put in mine, I take frozen blueberries, water, fresh oats, not instant, let them cook, and that's what I have every morning. That's it. Oatmeal every morning. Okay, no more bagels.
You definitely walk to the tune of a different drummer, Keith Famey. For the listeners out there that fancy that they walk to a different drummer, what do you say to them?
That's great. Follow that beat. You know, I just think that in life, we deserve to, as human beings, not to worry so much about what people think. And really do what you feel you want. As long as what you're doing is of good nature and it's of good intention, then live that dream. Chase that vision. Run to that end of the rainbow. Why not? We're only here once. And, you know, and when you're with a lot of these elders, like I've been spending time, that are 90, 91 years old, and they look at you and they say, and you've become friends and close to them, and they go to you and they say, I know the end is near. You think, oh my God, yeah, you're right. So I say, listen to the drum beat and follow it. Don't worry about someone else's beat.
You were the former president of Rainbow Connection. Can you tell us about that organization?
You know, the I was very fortunate. I sat on the board of Rainbow Connection for many years, and I was their president for a while. The Rainbow Connection, founded by Brooks Patterson and some other individuals, raises money for children with life-threatening illnesses, and it's always been probably one of the proudest times of my life to say that I was part of something that was so helpful to children in such a unique way. And from that experience, I had a chance to go to Hawaii and do Ironman with a young boy named Adam Rose, who I met through the Rainbow Connection, who had leukemia and was in a wheelchair for the rest. He will be for the rest of his life. And together, we, along with my kids and family, we trained for this whole Ironman thing. And I went to Hawaii and did Ironman, and I pushed him through the finish line, and he was there, you know, after 16 hours. And it was a touching experience. But I think more importantly than all that, the Rainbow Connection is a great organization. But the lesson to be learned there, and there's always so many lessons in life, is this: that these kids are living with things, and they deal with things that so many of us are fortunate we don't have to, and they do it with a smile on their face. That's courage.
This is the holiday season, time to give back. We're so busy with cookies and gifts and everything. Talk to us about giving back.
Well, I've always, I'm always the kind of guy that stops in the corner and gives somebody a buck or two. I just think that, I think that the season of giving, the season of holidays, is about giving. And I think that if we can always remember that year-round as well, but, you know, the organizations like the Salvation Army and things like that, you really need to support those. And this is the time to give. And so give a little. Whether you volunteer some time at a homeless shelter, which, you know, I've been fortunate enough to do many times, or whether you, you go somewhere where you know that you're going to give some money or clothes to help somebody, then why not do it? It can only enrich you. It'll make you feel good.
They say that life is a series of chapters, Keith. Your life surely is a series of chapters. A lot of people today in this area are looking at changing careers, changing jobs. What would you say to those people?
Do it. Just don't change yourself. Just do it. If I don't know if I've ever, I'm not sure at what point in time in my life will I actually say this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. I think that anything is possible, and I think that with the right vision and the right hard work, you can make anything happen, and it's your life.
Last question, what advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
I guess the advice I give to anybody, but to a young listener, it's I think if do good and good will come. It's not rocket science. I just think that there's a bigger energy force of power out there, spiritually, God, however you want to look at life and however you want to look at the world. I feel if you do good in some way, every day, every way, good will come to you. Don't look for good to come to you if you don't have the time in your life to do good for others. Do good and good will come.
Keith Famey, thanks for an amazing life. Please keep it up.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Our guest next Sunday will be the founder and pastor of Oak Point Church, Bob Chirac. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spoken.